Creative businesses can look beautiful on the outside, but while founders are quietly carrying everything behind the scenes, I know firsthand how it feels, and I've got the lovely Sophie with us today. And Sophie's come all the way from Cheltenham down to Devon, so I feel so honoured that you're here. But let's start with who you are, what you do. Let's start right back at the beginning, and I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay. Hi, Kate. I'm Sophie. I'm co-founder and creative director at Hooey. We are Cheltenham-based, as you said. It wasn't that long of a journey. It's all good. We're a Cheltenham-based agency, and we basically bring clients in at brand, usually, when they've spotted something's missing or they want to start something new or they need some help. They usually come to us there. And we help with everything to do with that brand strategy, refreshes, rebrands, whatever they need. And then we take their brand out into the world. So whether that's websites, digital, et cetera, ongoing design services, that's what we service them with. But we're all about that starting bit. You know, they come in at the thinking. We always do the thinking before the doing.
Yeah.
We've been going not even 3 years. So we are babies, I'd say, in agency world. I've been in agencies my whole life. It's all I really know, all these weird quirks are normal to me. I started Hooey with Harry about 2.5-ish years ago now. Essentially, I was feeling a little bit disillusioned being in a kind of corporate, more of a corporate environment. And I just wanted to get back to having that connection with clients, be a bit closer to seeing the impact of the work as well.
Yeah.
Or I felt a little bit disconnected from all of that. So I also had a long-standing dream to start a studio, but I knew I was kind of self-aware enough to know I wouldn't be good at that on my own. I needed company. I need social interaction. I need skills, you know, that I haven't got. And Harry and I knew each other socially and professionally. So it kind of came up one day, you know, I think Harry gave me a bit of a look and kind of said, I think we could do something here. And within about, I guess it was within 6 months, definitely, if not quicker, I had left my job as creative director.
Wow.
And we had decided to set up together. So, yeah.
Amazing. So let's go back to, I'm always intrigued, the name. Where did the name come from?
So Hooey. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the first name we came up with, actually. We did pitch a few projects under a different name. But we came up with Hooey when we were doing a general brainstorm around what we wanted to call ourselves. We came across this word, it's already existing word that means like fun or silliness or nonsense. And we really felt like that appealed to us, you know, for me coming out of a corporate environment, for Harry wanting to explore more creative work, the idea about fun again, you know, finding joy in what we were doing again, doing that together was really, really appealing. Also this idea of nonsense and there being like a lot of nonsense out there in the agency world, you know, clients hearing a lot of nonsense. We really wanted to cut through that as well. So that felt like that really resonated. And we just loved it. You know, once we'd heard that word Hooey and we kind of started to feel really attached to it, we put a visual identity to it and it really just felt like the whole thing was coming to life in a way that we didn't really see anybody else, you know, doing in the field. So we were pretty pleased that was going to help us stand out and, you know, bring out this idea of we can find joy in what we're doing.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because so we specialise in food and drink. Yeah. And the reason we niche down into that industry is because we're so passionate about it. But also we really wanted to have fun with what we do.
Yeah.
So that goes back to if you live and breathe something and you're so passionate about it and you still want to have fun.
Yeah.
You're sitting in the right space, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. I think also, you know, it's probably important to say we both had small children at the time. Harry and I both had a baby that was maybe one or two at this point. Two separate babies, that is. We didn't have the same baby. We both had our own baby of around that age. And I think, you know, that really, I guess, sharpens the need for you to go and do something that you enjoy.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to leave this child and go out to work, money can't be the only driver, you know, and I can't be in an environment where I feel like I'm not bringing my best every day. Like
yeah.
I've got to do something that's really, really worthwhile. So I think for both of us, that like played a role in wanting to start something for ourselves and do something a little bit different. You know, we want to go out there and challenge ourselves, but really, really enjoy it on a day-to-day basis and make it worthwhile.
Yeah. So what does, now this could be a really difficult question, but what does your audience client set look like? just so that our audience and our listeners can understand what sort of spaces you sit in and operate in.
Yes, so they are really, really varied. And I'm, you know, like I say, that's probably reflective of the fact that we're 2.5 years in. But yeah, we've got pharmaceuticals, opposite end of the spectrum. We've got charities right in the middle. We've got, you know, vintage jewelry brands in Beverly Hills. We also work for National Trust. We, you know, so we've got clients, you know, across the spectrum, really. And not to say we won't niche down at some point. I think, you know, in the future, we might well decide to do that. But at the moment, we're really enjoying like that mix of clients, and they all bring something different as well. Lately, we've been getting a bit more work around in the architecture and interior space as well.
Ooh.
So more service-based businesses, but we also really love doing retail and product-based businesses as well. So
we sit in the same space. We love it
as
well.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the minute, we're not niching, but never say never on that one.
Yeah. So agency world.
Yeah.
I talk about it a lot. I feel like it just, I can't even say it because it's so vast. It sits in its own little pocket. I say this all the time to people in our industry. I've worked with sales coaches, business coaches, lots of different people who sit in different niches. The agency world is a different kettle of fish again. Mm. And it's taken me, like I'm 9 years into this journey of me starting as a freelancer, going into agency world. Yeah. And in the last sort of 2-3 years, so exactly the same sort of time frame as you, I've realised it is a different kettle of fish. And actually, it really takes different tactics, different learning, different growth. So my question to you is, in the last 2 years, what's been the heaviest part of building, growing, learning? Like, what's that felt like? It's a really broad question.
I think there's lots of challenges in it, I'd say. I mean, where we're at, I'm still probably grappling with this, how many hats I have to wear. That's been probably more prevalent lately because Harry, my business partner, has been on maternity leave and she's just come back. So I've been, running the business in her absence. So all of the things that Harry's great at came into me. I'm not great at those things. And I had to wear, you know, the hats I was already wearing and Harry's to the best of my ability. And that I found to be particularly challenging. So I think that's really sort of, I guess, you know, influenced my experience in the last couple of years. But outside of that, I would say, and outside of having to do lots of different jobs, I'd say one of the things I find challenging is trying to do the job of creative director really well whilst making money. Those two things are opposing forces. And I kind of now appreciate, guess what, a privilege it is to be in the role of creative director when you don't have responsibility for the financials.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that I didn't have some responsibilities in that area as a creative director. Obviously you do. But I was in an agency environment where I was very much protected with lots of people in client services roles, lots of people in, you know, the senior leadership team, the board. So actually I'm playing a role in that, but there's so many people whose jobs it is to make the business money. And I actually feel like you can't be that as good as a creative director as you want to be if you're thinking about the numbers. You just, you know, in order to let those creative thoughts really flow and get you to the best place and help your team get to the best place, you can't really be thinking about utilization or whether the client budget is, you know, is this out of scope or not. Those two things directly oppose. And that, you know, I've always felt in the past that that's two people who are opposing there, really. My role as a creative director, I will, communicate with somebody in client services around that. We will come to a deal or an agreement on that. Like, where can I push it? How much time can I have to get this result? It's their job to kind of push back on me, make sure the client's getting what they need, make sure the commercials are working. And so you have that push and pull in that relationship. But when that person isn't there and you're you're a co-founder, and we're both from the creative side, we're not, you know, neither of us is from client services side. The desire to do the best work and the desire to make money have to coexist within me. And that can be a real push and pull, and that's quite challenging.
And do you feel like that is still ongoing? Because naturally, as the business will grow, that will still sort of...
And it's something I'm trying to I'm aware of, and I don't necessarily have a workaround for that
yet.
But what I'm also aware of is, you know, how that might affect my team. Whereas, you know, like I was saying, in my previous roles, I've kind of had the freedom to protect my team from it as well.
Yes.
And be like, no, you do that work. Don't worry too much. You know, I'll get you more time if you need more time. I could sort of like give them that gift, but because I'm now so much closer to the, you know, the financials and the commercial realities of it, I'm aware when I'm going to a meeting with my team, you know, I've got to brief here and not caveat every creative instruction with a, you know, in this many hours, please, which is really difficult. I don't want my team to get mixed messages from me. So it's something I've got to really work on that for their sake.
Yeah. And it is always going to be a balance, isn't it? Because I remember somebody saying to me, it must have been 3 years ago, and the current team that I've got now, I'm really lucky with my team. They're absolutely fantastic. We're 90% all females as well, which brings challenges sometimes brings, you know, lots of loveliness, and we all get along really, really well. But somebody said to me 3 years ago, Kate, so you're going to be head of sales. And I was like, sorry? I was like, I'm not a salesperson. I'm a digital marketer. You know, that is my skill set.
Yeah.
It's what I'm really good at. And I like laughed it off. I was like, head of sales, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But you have to.
Yeah.
You have to be agile, and you have to move with it when it's your business, don't you?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I've very much seen that as well. And I think especially, you know, whilst Harry's been off, I have felt myself kind of stepping a little bit more into that. I think she's a real natural salesperson and is brilliant at like building relationships with people. But also naturally, I think we spent the first couple of years of the business, you know, essentially getting work from the people that were ready to buy from us. You know, the minute we launched, they were ready for us.
Yeah.
They knew us already. They were really warm to it. It wasn't that hard to convert those clients. And we've kind of come out of that now. We're in that new challenge of finding leads that are that bit more disconnected, you know. So converting a cold lead into a client, you know, it feels like a whole different ball of wax. So
yeah,
I definitely feel like my role has had to evolve a bit more into sales, and it's not something I'm experienced in. You know, normally in the past I come in at pitch stage, or you know, I haven't really thought, you know, how many calls have gone before that, how did they get the call, you know, how hard that was to get even get to that point where you're in the room with them, because it wasn't my responsibility. So yeah, I'm starting to feel that now at the point where we are nearly 3 years in, that sales is a much bigger part of it.
Yeah. And it's also, I think when you're growing an agency, there's a lot of self-discovery in there, isn't there, as well, around, you know, okay, I've started it and I'm this person.
Yeah.
I wear 1,000 hats.
Yeah.
Who am I then going to become? Who do I need to be for the business? And I think that changes over time as well.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, I am creative, and, you know, Harry said this to me earlier today. It's running through my veins 24/7. So I know, like, for me, that is still where my core competencies are. You know, that's why I got to be a creative director in the first place. And that's, I really want to keep making sure that those skills come out in the business. It's just a case of, I guess, organically spotting where's my time going, and could that actually be a thing better done by somebody else who's more experienced in that, to free my time back up so I can keep stepping back into this role, essentially, of creative director, and keep making sure that I'm consciously doing that and not slipping into being a full-time salesperson or, you know,
accounts.
Yeah.
HR, all of it. I feel like there's a lot in there, isn't there?
Yeah.
And also, I think when you are creative, because again, we sit in a creative environment, it is a totally different skill set.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about
creatives
like space and freedom and, you know, colours and all those nice things. I mean, you tell me, that's totally not my bag, really. But then when you have to lean into something that's data, analytical, process-driven, policy-driven, you're like, oh my God, it's like suffocating.
Yeah. I mean, I love a bit of process, don't get me wrong. Like, I love to work out how we're doing something and look at how to make it better. But definitely there are certain tasks which do not suit my brain at all. And I've really, you know, that's thrown in sharp relief when you're trying to run a business. So yeah, anything that involves a spreadsheet, you know, is just not my bag. And I have to, therefore, I can't just not do that. I have to just work extra hard, yeah, to concentrate, you know, and I don't necessarily think I've got the hacks down for that. And sometimes, you know, there's a frog I won't eat, and I know I need to do that. So
yeah,
you know, it takes a lot of talking to myself, like, just do that task and then you're free. So I have to kind of dangle creative rewards for myself. You know, if you can get this done by this point, you're allowed to go and do X, Y, or Z creative task.
Love that.
I mean, otherwise it doesn't get done. I'm not saying that always works, because it doesn't, but
yeah,
trying to kind of, you know, figure out what works best for my brain. Yeah. And definitely getting to do the creative stuff is where the joy is. And by that, I don't mean I'm on the tools necessarily, but, you know, giving the direction, even on a creative job, is the joyous part for me.
And that eat the frog piece as well. I remember saying that to my team like 3 years ago, and they were like, is she all right? What does that mean? I'm like, it's doing something that you don't want to do. It's always at the bottom of your list.
Yes.
You never get to it, because you don't want to get to it.
Don't want to get to it.
But it's so important.
You know what the thing is. And often it's the thing, it takes you 5 minutes and it's done, but it's the thing that you dreaded. And lots of tasks fit into that category for me.
Oh, I know. Me too. Admin. I hate admin. My inbox, I talk about this all the time, is the bane of my life.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so busy. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
Which is great on one hand, which is fantastic. But also, I am like you. Like, if somebody said to me, Kate, go and create an email marketing campaign, I'd be like, yes, any day.
Yeah.
I'm going.
Yeah. I'm off.
Yeah. I'm done. So, agency world, I think, and again, there's a lot of sort of perception out there around, it's all flashy, it's all great, everything's polished, it's really easy to run an agency. You know, you've got clients, you've got team, you've got output, you've got time, you've got all sorts of different parameters in there.
Yeah.
I guess my question is around when we're supposed to be polished and when we're supposed to look a certain way in agency world.
Yeah.
What's the reality? Because I'd love to hear it from your lens. I can talk about ours, but what does your reality look like when there's this perception all the time and it's not real?
No. And I think, you know, realistically for, you know, an agency of our size, there isn't that much polished work, you know, if you're trying to feed an algorithm or you're trying to keep in touch with your clients on the regular about what you've done, there's only so much polished work that you can actually show. You know, it's not something we're creating every single day. We might be doing work every single day, but it's not, you know, that beautiful polished visual that people get straight away. It's not always going to be like that. So I think as times have just changed, and I see, you know, quite a lot of agencies still only publishing their work. And it's, you know, it's interesting tactic to take. I'm sure it's less time consuming than trying to show another side of yourself. Although, you know, goes without saying, producing work to share is also not a fast thing to do. If you're trying to produce a polished visual, it is time consuming. But to my mind, you know, in 2026, you just can't get away with that anymore. Like, you have to show a bit more about who you are.
Yeah.
You have to, like, you know, lift the curtain a little bit and show people how you work. So we still have, you know, that moment where there is some polished work, but we definitely try to kind of drip feed the process a little bit more, you know, celebrate the moment that we get that client, talk a bit about what we're doing for them before we show that work, to let people in a little bit, you know, what's happening behind closed doors and what we're working like. We don't share, like, everything that we do. I also don't think that's necessary. But yeah, on a day-to-day basis, you know, we're working hard on trying to keep our clients happy and juggle all of the other things that we've just mentioned. So we don't have time to be thinking about what we put out into the world being perfect. So I don't think there's, like, an easy answer, but I definitely think we've stepped away from that world where everything has to be super polished and into a place where we're slightly more open and more vulnerable and put ourselves out there a bit more. But we're not all about that. You know,
yeah,
we've got work to do and we've got things to get on with as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's an interesting one because, again, I was speaking to somebody last week and they were like, Kate, everywhere I go, I see you, like, on LinkedIn, you're here, there and everywhere. But you're really honest, aren't you? And I'm like, that's a good thing. Isn't that a really good thing to be honest in an environment where actually sometimes things are a little bit polished? And I particularly gravitated towards your LinkedIn because you speak really honestly. And I think that's really, really important. Like we're women in business. We sit in a space that's so noisy and so saturated that when you lean into the story, the why, the honesty, that, you know, we're human beings at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I gravitated towards your sort of honest approach. So let's just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think that was born out of not wanting to just put polished stuff out there into the world, like you were just asking about, and wanting to show a bit of a side of me, you know, as a founder, and I guess build my own sort of like personal profile as a founder. And had this, we had this little kernel of an idea in the content strategy around, you know, a relatable founder post that was about an honesty bomb. And I thought, you know what, I think there's some legs in this, and I'm going to get my first post out there without thinking about it, because my method is, you know, if in doubt, say yes and then deal with it later.
Love that. Has that got you in trouble yet?
I don't think so far. It's just, you know, I like to follow through with what I've said. Yeah. So if I say yes to something, I kind of have to do it. So if it feels a bit scary, I think don't overthink it. Say yes, deal with it later. And usually that's fine. And it means I end up somewhere I wouldn't have been otherwise. So I basically put out my first post on that saying, I am going to be doing this. And had nothing planned for that, you know, that wasn't sitting in a nice spreadsheet or on Asana or anything beautiful. And it just meant once I'd started to do it, I had to dig really, really deep, you know. It's like, what can I say that feels truly honest, that's going to be interesting to people? But of course, you're thinking about all sorts of things. What a potential client's going to think? What a past colleague's going to think? You know, how's this going to land with people? Is it going to put them off? When what I'm trying to do is be relatable and just start conversations with people and do something that kind of keeps me amused, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, I think I got more and more confident as I went through, and I went, okay, people aren't cancelling me, you know, this is okay. And I can come up with some other things. But definitely every time I did feel like, I guess, nervous.
Because, bit vulnerable?
Yes, completely. Because you think if I kind of concluded by the end of it, if I wasn't feeling like that, it wasn't a good enough thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't honest enough if I didn't feel a bit nervous about it. So those were the things I sort of had to post. But I would normally write it and then sit on it just for a few days. You know, I'd leave it there in a draft and then I would just get that out there. And usually I got genuinely positive reactions from people, supportive, interested. Way more people than I thought saying, yeah, that's me too, and you know, yeah, I do that too. So it was something I really enjoyed, and it gave me, you know, a focus as well. So I kind of wrapped that series up of, like, you know, honesty bombs kind of thing from a founder, and I kind of regret it because I miss it now.
Bit of self-discovery in there at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so who knows, might reignite that one.
Yeah, I can't wait. I hope you do. But I guess going back to those honesty bombs, why do you think agency founders find being honest so difficult?
I think it's in, you know, it's a service-based business. We want our clients to feel like we're the best so they don't leave. I think it's a deep, you know, it's a core worry that if they expose any weakness, they'll be off and you'll lose their custom. And I think, you know, much of the model is built around that, you know, wanting to appear perfect, wanting to appear to know everything, understand everything, have it all perfect. And we don't have that, you know, and nobody does. I've been there putting across an impression to the client that you're all over something, even if you aren't necessarily, you know. Across my entire career, I've seen how we inherently try to smooth things over for a client so that they don't have to worry. And that's okay, but it's really hard work. Really hard work to constantly be doing that. And it does feel not, you know, like you can't be human sometimes, you know. Yeah. I can't show any weaknesses or this client will leave is a really dark place to be, actually. Yeah. Isn't it? Because you do have weaknesses and you will probably show them, and clients don't want you to be covering things up or not being honest with them. So yeah. it's just you know, an approach that I've felt maybe a bit uncomfortable with. One of my, you know, an old colleague on and boss, actually, who I think was just brilliant in the client services space. If there was something she didn't understand or wasn't sure of with a client, she would pick up the phone and ring them.
Yeah.
And it was only when I saw her doing that, I realized how rare it was, because mostly we'd go, we'll just we'll
email
do some
them.
More research, or we'll, yeah, you know, last resort, possibly email them, but never just ask, you
yeah.
know. And I think that's, yeah, that's difficult on everybody. And I don't think it's that healthy for either side,
no.
really. So a bit more honesty and vulnerability surely is a better place to be, and you build a better lot.
100%.
But I'm not in client services, so, you know.
Yeah,
it's probably easy for me to say that.
Yeah.
But I've had to have my hat on enough. I feel like, well, this is my way, even if it's not the best way or the way that everybody has been taught or is doing it themselves. It's my way of operating. Otherwise, I go a bit insane.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Again, I was talking to somebody about being a people pleaser.
Mm.
So, you know, agency world, you sit with clients, you sit in that client space, and like you say, you try and smooth things over because they are the most important thing in that, you know, in that project, in that space. And you end up trying to please, but also one thing that we really lean into, I think I said to you before we started recording, was the data.
Yeah.
We can never falter on the data that, you know, we sit in digital marketing, we can never falter on our data. And the data tells us a lot.
Yeah.
So I always say to my team, we're the experts. Lean into the data. Whatever the data is telling us, that's the route we go down.
Mm.
However, if we mess up, just say sorry and say that we've messed up. And I think that's where a lot of agencies miss the boat.
Mm.
I think, like you say, there's a lot of covering up sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, oh, no, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like 9 times out of 10, we're human beings talking to human beings. Clients are human beings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless of how much red tape or red ribbon we put around them.
Yeah.
They are humans.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it, watching it play out. But I think over time, in our sort of growth journey, I used to deal with those relationships one-to-one.
Yeah.
And I was so sort of, you know, emotionally attached to those relationships.
Mm.
And one of my biggest learners has been, I can't create those one-to-one relationships with everybody.
Yeah.
And I have to step out of some of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is difficult.
Yeah.
Really, really difficult.
Yeah, completely. We're at that stage now where, you know, Harry and I, we could probably just about be involved in everything if we really wanted to, but it's clearly not the most efficient way to get things done. And it's not what our team wants. So, you know, trying to spot, okay, where can we set them free to do their thing, you know, and be released a little bit from being involved in every last thing. Like, that's the place we want to get to. I guess knowing what our, you know, what's our who we weigh in terms of, you know, like you were just saying, honesty, if something doesn't quite go to plan, or, you know, how we converse with our clients, you know, we've got to have our who we weigh. And that's something that we're still, you know, developing, and we learn on every single project, you know. So we're just starting to introduce, like, wash-ups is something, you know, has happened in every agency I've been at. And I always saw the value of them, but it's something that we're just introducing now, is, you know, that time to, like, really reflect on a project. What would we do differently next time? As a learning, like, for the whole team of, like, what are we going to do about, you know, as Hui, how do we feel about this, you know, for next time?
Yeah. I'm going to take that back to my team when we get back. We don't do wash-ups. Love that.
Great.
You've absolutely taught me something today. So the honesty bombs that you're dropping, I feel like we've brushed over those.
Okay.
Let's touch on some good honesty bombs.
Okay.
Go.
Gosh.
One or two.
What did I say? I think, one I got some really positive reactions to was this, like, scary admission that we only deliver one concept. It's not something I've ever done at any other agency, right? So typically, if you're presenting a creative routes, you would present three. We all know inside an agency that probably you love two of them, and the third one you don't really love, but you've got to show a third for balance. Every agency has a different way of doing it, but, you know, sometimes you'll have, you know, a kind of safe, a kind of middle ground, and then a stretch idea that the client will love but probably not buy. Often what happens is, you know, two of the ideas are amalgamated into a third idea. It doesn't necessarily always work. Sometimes that's okay. But for Hui, when we started, we're all about thinking, okay, well, what do we want to do like agencies, and what do we not want to do? And actually spending ages and, you know, consequently the client's budget on exploring lots of different routes before showing them anything felt kind of like madness. So we just changed up the way we do that. We show them a lot more frequently, you know, smaller steps. So often, you know, let's say this is brand, they've already been through the brand strategy process with us. So we're already really close to them and yeah. what needs to be done. Then we, you know, write the creative brief. They see and approve the creative brief. We develop a mood board. They see and approve the mood board. So by the time we get to that concept, it's not a surprise. You know, we don't yeah. have, you know, a big reveal, or we try to kind of avoid a big reveal. I think we've accidentally done that once or twice, actually. And, you know, if the client looks kind of shocked, which has happened once or twice, especially in the early days, we were like, the process hasn't gone quite right. Like yeah. they should know roughly what to expect. They should be obviously happy.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
It still should be bringing some joy to them when they're seeing themselves reflected back. You know, we do get really positive comments. But yeah, we just go in with that one concept. And that is different to, you know, to what every agency I've worked for has done, I believe. And it is a bit different from the norm. But yeah, I put that out there as a kind of, you know, something I was worried to sort of say out loud in case it put anybody off or whatever. Yeah. But actually, you know, quite a lot of people chimed in and said, that's what we do too. I firmly believe in that. You know, why are we spending the client's budget on, you know, yeah. Extensively exploring routes that they haven't even seen, you know, that kind of thing. So that was, yeah, that was one I dropped. And I guess another one was a bit more about the finances. You know, I'm a bit more green on that. You know, I've been doing a self assessment tax return for X number of years, you know, but outside of that, I don't have business qualifications. I don't have, you know,
me neither.
And like many of us, we start a business without that. I had the benefit of having Harry's knowledge. You know, she had already been self-employed for 7 years. So she had experienced, you know, the rhythms, I guess, of what happens in finances. But it isn't my bag. It didn't go in the way I wish it would. So we had an accountant, you know, we were doing everything to the letter of the law. We had an accountant, things were getting filed. So nothing went awry. I just felt like until we got some help from a fractional CFO, we didn't really have a strategy.
Yeah.
So we were fine. We were bringing money in, we were paying our taxes, but we didn't really know how to get to that. You know, how do we know when we can afford somebody to hire somebody? You know, how do we know how much money we can take out of the business? You know, when's the best time to invest in X, Y, or Z? So until we got that a bit more like strategic help, I'd say that was really, really quite challenging for me, particularly because it just doesn't suit my skill set.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was one of the things I would say. It was a challenging 18 months for me without that strategic support.
Yeah. And it's also learning all of that stuff as
yes,
well, because
yes.
there's nobody else to do it for you really, is
no,
there?
No.
It's difficult.
Yeah. And it's still slightly my black spot, I think.
Yeah, I know. And I always say to my team, it seems to be on like a Friday morning, I'm like, I'm just going in to do accounts. And they're like, no messages, no yes. WhatsApps, no emails, no nothing. Because
it's not
easy for me either. It's
yeah.
not something I enjoy. It's not something I gravitate towards. It is my eat my frog.
Yes.
It's not what I want to be doing with my time. Is it fundamental to the business though? Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
So you end up leaning the ways you don't really want to lean, but have to lean into, which is difficult.
Yes.
Really, really difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't wait for the honesty bombs to come back on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I will be digging deep to find what can I say that feels, you know, genuinely interesting for people to hear and potentially is a little bit, you know, a bit different. So
yeah.
I'll get back to you on that one.
So something we haven't touched on, pricing in agency world.
Yes.
It's something that, you know, even if I go back 3 years, we never put any pricing on our website. We never mm-hmm. talk about pricing.
Yeah.
And now I talk about it because
right.
actually I think, you know, yes, it's relative per industry, per client, per project. I totally understand that. And we
yeah.
try really, really hard to, you know, maneuver as much as we can. But pricing in agency world, I feel, is sort of another taboo subject that everybody just doesn't really talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you start an agency as well, it's like, do we start the cheapest? Are we, you know, are we the most expensive?
Yeah.
Where do we put our expertise?
Yeah.
So how have you navigated that? Because that's a difficult one.
Yes, I would say that's, and it's really challenging. It's not something that we've nailed, I guess. I think we've found a sweet spot in terms of what we charge. You know, we aren't the cheapest, but yeah, we compare really favorably against a bigger agency. So for the right kind of client, we're at the perfect level. You know, we offer a lot more than a freelancer would, obviously, and that is reflected in the prices. You know, we don't charge freelance prices, and we can't.
Yeah.
But we also don't charge bigger agency prices. So I guess the benefit of, you know, having worked in the industry and within agencies for unnamed amount of years is that I know what I was getting charged out at, you know, and it was my job in a lot of those agencies to help put together the scope of work and to estimate the time. So
yeah,
I guess a system. I still use a consistent system as learnt through my career. You know, we haven't broken it with any big model. We don't use value-based pricing. We use quite an old-fashioned, I guess, traditional model of pricing where we estimate how long we think things are going to take. And we price based on that, and we put our day rates at a fair amount that sits us nicely in the middle.
Yeah.
I think the thing for us with pricing is looking at if you're going to base your pricing on time is how are you spending your time? How are you best spending your client's budget? And that's where, you know, we make those decisions, like we're going to go all in on one concept instead of three. Like, you know, that's actually ultimately means the budget is spent in a much better way, and the budget is lower, obviously, than if we were going to do three.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've considered other methods, but right now that's where we sit. And again, not to say that won't change, because we've got the freedom to change it if we want.
Yeah.
And we do like a retainer model, and that, you know, that offers a slightly better rate for people, and that's something I'd love to focus more on. You know, yeah, in terms of that kind of guaranteed service for clients, but also stability for us as a growing agency. I would love to focus more on that as well in future.
Yeah. And I think I remember when I first started, I was literally like, oh, I'll plug myself out at like £15 an hour. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make loads of money and become a millionaire on that. And it's like, but it's not realistic, because there's a lot that goes into working out that model. And there's a lot that goes into time versus team versus resource versus system. Like, there's just so much that goes into it. And I think that pricing piece will always be an agency world.
Yeah.
A difficult subject to navigate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we have a lot of conversations about, you know, how, in our, you know, for a start, when you're doing a proposal, I suppose, how you want to be selling the service into the person before they even get to that page where it talks about investment.
Yeah, I know.
They need to be completely sold before they see the figures. But we do have, you know, crisis of confidence sometimes, because you don't know who you're up against. You don't know what the client's got in mind. It can really, really lead you to second guess your own value.
Yes.
Second guess your pricing. You know, what's this person going to think about that figure? I've got no idea. And I find that, you know, really, really difficult. And the tendency can be just to like take it down a bit.
Yeah.
But definitely that's something that still happens. And what convinces me is, you know, when I see it line by line, who's doing what and when and how, and I see the hours, I'm usually convinced, you know, we have to put it in at that price, you know. Otherwise, we're doing the client a disservice, you know, and that has happened in the past. You know, you take the price down to help somebody out, and actually you end up with real tension in the studio that you have to, you know, either spend less time on it or get it done quicker, or that doesn't result in good work.
No.
So, you know, clients may feel like they've got, you know, a really good deal, but it doesn't always work like that. It sometimes just puts a lot of pressure on the team.
Yeah.
So we're still working on that. I think 2.5-3 years in, we're still figuring out, you know, is our pricing at the right spot? The feedback we get, I think we're attracting the right kind of clients, the right kind of prices. So I feel quite confident that we're in a good spot, but it doesn't mean you don't have a crisis every now and again.
Love a crisis. So saying no as well is something that, again, is talked about a lot in agency world.
Mm.
When you first start, you don't want to say no to anything.
Yeah.
Because you're like, yes, 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 yes.
Mm.
But then as you grow, I think you get to the conclusion of what's right, what's wrong, what's the right fit for you, what's not.
Yeah.
Have you come up against that before?
We have. I'm glad to say not very often. We'd have clients that ask for things, you know, a bit more last minute than I would like. But luckily, those clients are ones we have really good relationships with. So we're more than happy to kind of like offer that level of service where we say yes to those things. I think, you know, an example I can think of, and luckily it's only happened once, where we had a client where we had to essentially end the working relationship with them. So in a way, that's the biggest no, I guess.
Yeah.
Saying that after we had, you know, established a relationship with this client was one of the hardest decisions I think we've had to take as an agency. And second guessing, you know, are we doing the right thing? Are we right to make that decision? But ultimately, it was definitely the best decision for my mental health. And I think, you know, in terms of protecting the team from it as well, it wasn't something that we liked, seeing being put on the team as well. So it felt important to, you know, show up in that scenario and put ourselves before, you know, the money that would have potentially come in, or, you know, even the kudos we might have got for the work. It just wasn't worth it.
Yeah. And I think you're always going to have those projects, aren't you, that are challenging, or they are, you know, a no at the beginning and you still say yes to them, and then you go through the process and you're like, I knew this.
That's exactly it. And it was maybe ignoring a couple of
red flags.
Early red flags. A couple, yeah. And then you get in really deep, you know, and you're emotionally invested, and, you know, like any creative, you know, I put a little piece of my heart into every bit of work.
I do.
That I do. So, you know, you can forget at times that it's not your own brand, it's not your own company, because you feel so invested in these things. And the longer you go and work on that project, the more invested you can become. So it becomes really, really difficult to sort of exit that. And feel like, you know, you're not sort of handing a baby over, because it does feel like a real loss of control. You know, don't know what's going to happen with that now, but going to just have to leave that to fate, because this is the decision we've got to make.
Difficult, really, really difficult. Mm. And talking about sort of that emotional piece as well. So when I first started, I was so emotional when I first started my business.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, everybody was a really personal relationship. Everybody was like in my heart, and I am a people person.
Mm.
And as time's progressed and as the agency's grown, I've had to learn and grow to step back a bit, still channel my emotions, because it's still part of me and it's still really important to me that that's in there.
Yeah.
But I do think it toughens you.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, I've probably always found that to be difficult. Like I said, if you start to feel like it's your own work, and you have to remember it's not yours, it's for the client. So I do, you know, I can still take things personally.
Yeah.
But I do try to question myself, you know, why is this troubling you? Is it because you wanted to be right and you can't be right in this situation? You know, what are they trying to say? And I can sometimes take feedback as criticism, but I'm still learning, and I probably will be forever learning how to, you know, just try to step back a minute and go, what's actually happening here? What can I do about it?
Yeah.
What can I not do about it? What do I need to let go? But definitely, I think, you know, through my whole career, I've been super passionate about doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's been a blessing and a curse in many ways.
And I only watched Gary V. I don't know if you've watched any of Gary V's content on Instagram and social media. So he's just been on a podcast, actually, and I was listening to him, and he was saying the guys that are going to win in 2026 and going into 2027 are the nice guys. And I was like listening to it like, oh, I'm the nice person.
Yes.
Because I think you can't hide being anything else now. Like, be authentic, show up, be real, talk honestly. Like, it's all the stuff we've just touched on. But I think if you're really sort of core to your personality and you do things right and you lean into the right things, it'll show you in a good direction, won't it?
Yeah. I still feel like I've got faith that, you know, I'm doing the right thing. It's just, you know, trying to, I guess, temper it so it's not disruptive, or it's not, but that's difficult, because then that opens up a whole thing about, you know, well, I can be disruptive every now and again if that's going to get, you know, something really good to happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really worth pushing. So spotting when are those moments where I'm absolutely right to be on this track, or do I need to, you know, rein that in a little bit or step back a little bit, because in this scenario, it doesn't really need that, it's not worth it. You know, I guess that's something I still I still grapple with. But I find that a lot easier as a creative director to help other creatives with it.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier when because I've got that tiny bit of separation. You know, it still can feel like my work, but I've not been on the tools all day, you know, for the last week, or working on this project for the last month in the same way that they have. I'm more able to see the bigger picture and understand how important it might be to chase after that thing, or whether you can just drop it.
So chasing of things and dreams and all of those things, it's an interesting, that's an interesting sort of next run, if you like, because again, you were a creative director in another agency. You then started where you are now and you're 3 years into that journey. One thing that I know that I dealt with, and tell me if you felt it as well, is when I was 3 years ago, I was like, I'm done now. I'm going to go and get a job as a marketing director. I'm just going to go and work for somebody else. Like, I'm done. I'm totally done with it. I know that I'm really good at what I do. I'm just going to go and work for somebody else, because I was chasing the salary. I was chasing the salary run of, oh my God, I could be a marketing director and I could be on like 100 grand or whatever it is. Or I take the hard route and I set up on my own and I build an agency, and that's a slower journey to where we want to get to. So how do you balance that? Because I think that's a really difficult question and conversation that's overlooked.
And you've reminded me of one of my honesty bombs, actually, which was I expected to be earning more by now. Definitely, you know, I guess it's easy to be tempted. I mean, it's not something I've thought about since started Hooey, really. But, you know, I've got friends in really well-paid jobs. And, of course, that sounds really, really appealing. Now I am where I am. The money sounds appealing, but I don't think any of the other things sound appealing right now. You know, we're still at a place with Hooey. We're having a really great time building this business, and I wouldn't choose anything else. But definitely, I think we both went into starting the business maybe with the expectation that we would be able to earn, you know, equivalent, I guess, to what we had been earning in our previous lives pretty soon, you know?
Yeah.
No real reason is there why why we can't be on, you know, a really quite respectable salary and have the perks of having our own business. And I think for both of us, that was a bit of a learning curve. And I've had to be a lot more patient. And the more, you know, the more, I guess, the longer we go, you know, we realize it's not, there's always a choice, you know, it's like, are we going to take, you know, a bit more money this month? Or are we going to save towards that thing that we wanted to get for the business? Or are we going to put some money aside for that next hire? And I don't think the penny had dropped with me that there would be such a stark like decision to make.
Yeah.
Me or them, you know, us or the thing. I didn't necessarily know quite how my pocket was going to be so reliant on that. I definitely saw, you know, what we got paid as quite a separate thing to, of course, it would be attached to how much you know, revenue there is in the business and what profit we're making. But I suppose, saw it as more of a guarantee or a thing that would come first. And I now sort of realise, well, it's not that clear. It's much more of a grey area, and we have to make that decision on an ongoing basis. You know, are we going to pay ourselves what we thought we were always going to be able to earn? Yeah. Or are we going to make that other decision, which might be better for long-term growth of the business? So I guess that's, you know, that's something I now know, and I would take all of these learnings into any other business that we decided to start, etc. But that would definitely be something I would take into account. And that was, you know, going from the exact same industry. So from an agency, starting an agency, you know, you kind of think you're going to have a roughly even keel, but just didn't really understand the undertaking of those, you know, that first period. I had known and expected that we wouldn't have, you know, that stability or income for the first bit.
Yeah.
To be super vague about it. I knew it was going to start like that. I suppose I didn't know how it would feel at this point now to still be making those decisions on an ongoing basis, you know?
And do you think it links you back to the reason why you started it in the first place? And it takes you away from, which is what I was always set on, the salary. You're always so set on the salary, aren't you?
Yeah.
But then I think what it does is it realigns you back to why you started your agency.
Yes, yeah, 100%. And I think we both went into it, you know, with a real like purpose anyway. We didn't go into it saying, let's build, you know, an X amount of K revenue business. That wasn't the approach. So it was always a bit more purpose driven anyway. So I knew what salary I was giving up. At the time when we started, you know, I did go for other job interviews. I knew what salaries I was turning down.
Yeah.
And I chose to do it anyway. And I still would make that same decision. I think I would, you know, if that was happening today, I'd just be going in with my eyes a bit more, a bit more open on that. That's an ongoing discussion and a potentially an ongoing sacrifice that you're making as a business owner. You know, that money isn't yours.
Yeah.
That money you see in the bank isn't yours. It's the business's, and you have to make that decision about what's best.
Yeah. And you know, aligning it back to you've got young children and, you know, the benefits that it brings of doing your own thing, really.
Yes, yeah.
To a degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I've been lucky to work at loads of amazing places that would offer flexibility. I can't quite imagine having the freedom that I've got now to be able to, you know, do what I need to do for the family. Yeah, I don't know that I'd have got quite the same ability, partly just through being needed by more people in the past, you know. So actually having a small team now, I think, is one of the benefits. I'm not in back-to-back calls all day. I'm not required to always be at something.
Yeah.
That gives me flexibility, you know, that just wouldn't have been possible in past roles, even though I was working for lovely companies with, you know, who always wanted to give you that flexibility. Yeah, it's not quite the same as what you can get for yourself.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think, you know, freedoms during the day, you know, it's not necessarily, like you're saying, the kind of glamorous side of agency life that comes with other things as well, you know. Yeah. I'm often sitting on it's not that I get my laptops out in the evening. I don't do that, actually. I really try to avoid getting my laptop out, but with, you know, being able to work anywhere and you're holding a tiny computer in your hand, it's quite difficult to escape and completely switch off. So I do think, you know, there's always going to be a balance. Sure, I can take some time off in the day, but I also, you know, work needs to be done, income needs to happen. You're always responsible for that, so you're mentally on the job a lot longer.
And the Agency Diaries was obviously born about opening up this space. Mm. And again, it's about, you know, we're in a noisy environment.
Yeah.
You turn on your phone, you're on Instagram, then you're on Slack, you're on emails, you're on here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
So how do we actually switch off? So my question to you, and I ask everybody that comes on this pod as a guest, is if somebody was starting an agency tomorrow, what is three things that they should protect early?
Gosh. Three things they should protect early. I mean, I try to protect my weekends.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at protecting my weekends. So weekdays, not so much. The boundaries blur a bit more, I would say. But weekends, I really do try to switch off. And, you know, unless there's something that desperately has to happen, it's not happening on a weekend. You know, that's my time with my family. Trying to do both backfires anyway, right?
Yeah.
And anybody who's tried to do that will know it just doesn't work. So I do have a really clear boundary around weekends. That's very obviously like anti like bro culture of working 24/7.
Yeah.
But that's what works for me. And I would definitely do that again if I was able.
Yeah.
Was something that we're talking about. So I would say I haven't achieved this. Caveat, I haven't done it. So maybe you should take my own advice. But it's something we're talking about a lot at the moment is social media. So we're a small team, you know, there's five of us. Social media has sat with me for the entire time that we've been going. And I find it to be, you know, particularly draining on my time, but we've, you know, I've got a toxic relationship with it, as many people have. You know, yes, I chase the dopamine hit, but and yes, I also feel you know, rubbish when I compare against other people. So it's something that I think I've sort of like unknowingly it's grown in size, and it's taking away from the energy I could be putting into other things. So we've been talking about, you know, we must get on top of our own channels. We must get on top of all those website refreshes, you know, all that backlog of case studies. And I've, you know, I've listed these things out. They're in Monday, they're in Slack, they're in, like, every method to try and
get it done.
But ultimately, when you've got, you know, an algorithm going, I need you, you know, 2-3 times a week, that always goes to the top of the list because it will only take X, Y, or Z amount of time. It always gets prioritized over the stuff that you know is more important long term. And it's a very, very difficult cycle to break from. So one of the things we've been talking about is absolutely is me stepping back from that responsibility, whether that's someone else in the team outsourced or whether we switch that off, you know? In terms of Instagram, I'm talking about specifically, not necessarily LinkedIn, because I don't get the same dopamine hit in the first place. Yeah. It's not so much for toxic relationship. That's more manageable.
Yeah.
So we've talked about that. And I think that is something I would be much more conscious of if I was starting again, is that commitment to that is, you know, it can be insane. And I've seen other female founders suffer in the same way. You know, you think it's free.
That's me. Right?
You're like, it's a free, you know, it's a free platform. Why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah.
But I think for us, it's not necessarily getting us clients, not in an obvious direct way anyway. So that's something we're talking about, you know, for my, protect my time, energy, mental health, that I might step back from that. So I would be a lot more conscious about that if I was starting again. Third thing,
they were two really good ones, though. They were really good ones. Yeah, they count as three. They're amazing. And it's so interesting when I ask our guests that question, because some are like, energy, or some, you know, there's so much in there, but it goes back to it's so personal, isn't it?
And I think, like, you know, I guess I have got a third one, and it would be to really try to understand myself before starting. I mean, this has been a sharp, sharp learning curve about, you know, how my brain functions, what I'm able to achieve, what I'm not able to achieve, what really stresses me out quite unnecessarily, what stresses me out with good reason, you know, all of those things. It's been, you know, a fairly, like, brutal exercise, like, understanding myself. And that's something that I would love to have gone in knowing a bit more about. And I don't know how you would go about that, but if you're a bit more self-aware and you can do design some systems around that, I think that would be a real benefit.
Yeah.
The more you understand yourself, the more you would be able to do that.
Who teaches you that stuff?
I have
though?
No idea. Can I have their number?
Me too, as well. It's a self-awareness journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the biggest journey I think I've been on, because you just become so self-aware, like, what's not working for me right now? What is really working? What's, you know, helping my team? What's enabling a project? And then you get to the point you're like, I know more about myself than I've known in the last, like, 30 whatever years.
Yeah.
So they are three really, really good ones that I know that our listeners as well. We've got startup agencies, we've got, you know, massive agencies that listen to the podcast, and we get comments in all the time. And hopefully these conversations are there to open up the floor and not create a silo. I never want us to think agency world can be really lonely as well.
Mm.
And, you know, whether you've got a team or you haven't got a team, you sit there and you're like, oh, I'm the only one that's feeling the way that I'm feeling. And you're not. There's, you know, there's thousands of agencies in the world. It's just opening up that space to have the conversation. Yeah. And we haven't really touched on women in agency world, which is a brief one we might want to touch on around. Again, I don't think there's that many female-founded agencies out there.
No, I don't know what the current stat is, but I've seen some horrifying ones in the past. Through my career, I've had all male creative directors. Wonderful, you know. There is no shade for any of those creative directors. They've been brilliant, but I didn't ever have, like, that role model of a female creative director. So it was challenging, you know, when I first went into that role. I was a bit like, what does this look like? How do I do this? You know, I did have quite a lot of, like, questions, like, where do I go? Like, how do I do this job? I'm not really sure, because I've only ever seen it done by a male. But I think that faded after a little while, you know, and I had a little word with myself. And I was like, if you think about who's been your creative director in the past, whilst they have been male, they have been so varied in personality, in approach, in how they managed me, in how they spoke about creative work, and how they gave me direction, that, and I, you know, there's so many of them I liked for so many different reasons. I was like, I'm just going to try and take all the best bits of those people. It doesn't matter what, you know, what gender they are. I just want to be, you know, the best version of myself and try and think about what did I love from that person? What did I love from that person? And embody that really. So it didn't take me too long to get over that.
Yeah.
But yeah, since, you know, becoming a female creative director, I've definitely connected more with other female creative directors. There's no club or anything, although that sounds great.
Yeah. there's another business idea for you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there is a club. I don't know about it yet. Please tell me, anybody who's in one. But definitely I've just kind of connected with more of those people on LinkedIn. I look at for opportunities to connect with women in business in general. So I've been to more networking events, more coffee dates, you know, more of those kind of things. Just to get comfortable amongst in women. I mean, I've always been comfortable in a women's company, but you know, in terms of talking business and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's lovely, you know. And I now, when I walk into an all male environment, I'm very conscious of it actually.
Yeah.
It can feel odd when you're used to being surrounded by so many women. Like with your company, we're predominantly female. So it's completely natural environment for us. And every now and again, if you're sort of faced with a bit of an old boys club, it can feel still quite alienating. I try to just hold my own now.
Yeah, I do as well. Really, really hard. And I feel like sometimes you then get a little bit of voices in your head, don't you? Like, should I be in this room? Should I not be in this room? What should I be saying? Shouldn't I be saying?
Yeah.
And then, like you say, I try really hard to lean into, I'm here because I should be here.
Yeah.
And I'm here because I've got a valuable voice.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an interesting one. I think as time goes on as well, it'll start to play out a little bit more.
Yeah.
But we need to find one of those creative director female clubs.
Right.
Or create one.
Yes.
Maybe we'll do that. thank you so, so much.
It's been a pleasure having you.
But let's just finish on, where can people find you on socials, website?
Yeah, I mean, we're currently on Instagram. Who knows, right? I've just potentially committed to me personally spending less time on that. We have an Instagram channel. We have a Hooey LinkedIn page. And you can also come and connect with me, Sophie Bride. I'm on LinkedIn a bit more actively on my personal profile. And we have a website, which is hooey.studio. And we're based in Cheltenham. So we like to make a nice cup of coffee. We're always happy to have visitors. So nice to see people in person. We're in Gloucester often as well. So if you're Southwest based and you can get to any of those places, we will gladly get you a coffee and a pastry.
Can I come first?
Yep.
I'll come for the coffee and pastry first. Thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the Agency Diaries.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.